Good morning, Chris Hull, Wake Forest Baptist Health Infectious Diseases. Thanks to everyone who expressed their concern. Make sure I was okay last week. It was a scheduling issue, and I can assure you I was in the best of health. But missed you guys, and let's try to catch up as to what's been going on in the last 2 weeks. First of all, just an observation, personal observation, not based on real objective data, but boy, there's a lot more people out and about, a lot more traffic, the lines in the drive-thrus are longer, more people in the stores, the restaurants have got people in them, and that's good. The economy's starting to go again, and people are starting to do things again. And our kids have been back in school for some time now. And so we had talked about when people were getting more out and about and traveling and doing things and being socially active, what that might mean. One thing that I've really noticed is it's really good to see our older people out who've been really kind of sheltering in place, to say, because they know their risks are higher if they get COVID. And it's nice to see that a lot of them obviously feel much more emboldened since they've been vaccinated and are starting to get out and enjoy life again and starting to go out and get the flowers and do things they like to do. So it's really good to see. But you know what the cool thing about this is, even though more people are out and about and doing these things, our little wavelet that was predicted turned out to be not so big at all. And so if you look at the state dashboard, while we did have an increase in cases through April, as we predicted, boy, it wasn't all that high, actually. So it really was a wavelet, not a wave, as I've been saying. And it does seem to be coming down. Here in North Carolina, on the state dashboard, you can really see it. Here in Forsyth County, also, I think we're starting to see our cases drop a little bit. So I think we may be on the back end of the wavelet. And then also nationally, including some of the states that have really been struggling through their late winter and early spring, like Michigan, central Minnesota, parts of Colorado, they're starting to drop off also. So if you look at our national numbers, we're down 21% off over the last 2 weeks, largely because of improvements in those problem spots. And so that's all really good news. Deaths will start to drop now too also because our cases are coming down. So is this the beginning of the end? Probably. We'll talk a little bit later about what the end to COVID actually is and what it isn't. But I think we're going to have a good summer. And so does the CDC, actually. Paper came out with them yesterday with four scenarios based on how many people get vaccinated and how many people continue to do social distancing and mask wearing. And all of the scenarios look good for the summer. In fact, the best ones, if 90% get vaccinated and we all still do what we're supposed to do, the number of deaths will be down to two digits across the U.S. by the end of the summer. So how's that in for an incentive to get vaccinated? How are our schools doing? Well, they're getting close to graduation, so the kids are all looking forward to that, I think. It's been a hard, long year for them between being virtual and not. Almost all of the school kids know somebody who's had to spend a couple weeks in quarantine because of an exposure. Most of them actually in the community or in the household and not in school. So the school itself has lived up to its promises to be safe places for our kids to be. But we still need to be cautious about their activities, particularly outside the classroom. And that would include intramural and extramural sports and other social activities, playgroup dates, social activities, proms, things like that. So you need to talk to your kids about continuing to wear the mask and distance, social distancing. And it's still not a good idea to have sleepovers and things along that line. Summer camps are coming up. CDC a couple weeks ago put out its information for the summer camps and how to get through the summer. I think most of it's sound. There may be some hiccups still in the overnight camps with COVID. We'll see how it goes. But there, it will be better than it was last year for our kids in the camps for the summertime. So some other news that's happened since we last talked. The CDC put out its guidance for mask wearing outdoors, which I don't think the CDC thought would be controversial, but it turned out it was a little bit. First of all, outdoors is safe, masked or unmasked. And what their guidance basically says, that if you've been vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask outdoors, unless you're in a real crowded situation, such as, you know, at a baseball game, sports event, at a parade, something along those lines, where you still should mask up. And I think that's sound. To tell you the truth, even for unvaccinated people, if they're really, if it's not a crowded situation and you're distanced from other people, I don't really see a need to wear a mask, even if you're unvaccinated. But I do agree with doing it when you're in a crowd. And so if you picture the 4th of July parade, standing shoulder to shoulder, waving the flag, that's probably a good time to wear your flag mask. But if you're out and about and spaced out, doing the Greenway, biking, jogging with some friends, I don't think the masks are necessary outdoors. Apparently some workplaces in the area are not requiring their employees to wear masks anymore if they've been vaccinated. Just a few words of caution about that, actually. How do you know your fellow employees have been vaccinated or not? Are you going to ask them? And is it appropriate to ask somebody if they've been vaccinated? Because really, it's private health information, right? And so asking somebody whether they've been vaccinated or not, so you know whether you can wear a mask or not, is kind of puts them on the spot and may not be appropriate. So workplaces need to know that and understand that. And actually, workplaces should talk to their HR people and their HR consultants. But most of your HR people will tell you that it's not legal for an employer to ask their employees if they've been vaccinated or not. And it gets into the American for Disability Acts and all sorts of other things that the lawyers talk about. But if you're in a workplace, you may want to get some expert advice before you do that. Now, the CDC's guidance for whether to wear a mask or not indoors is really meant for households and for family situations and for family get-togethers. And actually, the guidance says right in it, this is not intended for the workplace or for healthcare areas. So a lot of larger employees, including us at Wake Forest Baptist Health, are going to continue to mask. Even if you're in a group of six or seven people and you kind of think everyone's been vaccinated, we're going to continue to mask. And the reason is so that because we can't ask. The second reason is that it shows everyone around you that we're still going to be safe, because even though vaccines are rolling out, we haven't hit a spot yet where so many people are vaccinated that we can take the mask down yet. Except if you're like 20 feet from people like we are here right now. But just a word about masking. The CDC guidance is there. There's a big chart on what people can do if you're indoors and outdoors. And if you're immunocompromised, you probably want to talk to your physician about what might be safe for you. Generally, for immunocompromised people, you're going to want to ratchet up your level of protection by one level. So if you're getting cancer chemotherapy, for instance, and you're having a cookout with your neighbors and you're outdoors, you might want to stay masked except for the time when you're eating. Everyone around you may not be, but you may want to be because you're immunocompromised. And for people who are around immunocompromised people, you should also be ratcheting up your level of protection by one. So when you look at the CDC chart, which is available on their website, and you're immunocompromised, just take it up one level, and that should be safe for you. And if you have questions, ask your doctor, your oncologist, or your physician who's managing your immunocompromising medications. Another thing that's come out in the last couple, 3 weeks are at-home COVID tests. So these are basically antigen tests that are done off of a nasal swab. Some might come out for saliva, but I think the ones that are out now are nasal swabs. And then you do the swab, and then you stick the swab into a little cassette that, for some of them, are hooked to your smartphone by Bluetooth. And then it gives you the result, and then also sends the result supposedly to your local health department. So the positive or negative is recorded. Greenville, North Carolina actually is one of the CDC's big prototypes to see how well at-home testing can actually improve the health of the community itself. So it's kind of cool that that's being done here in North Carolina. So some of our colleagues who may be watching in Greenville, maybe you're in that study from the CDC. The good thing for those people who are in that study is their at-home test is free. Otherwise, you'll be paying for it, and you can get it at CVS or Walgreens, probably by the end of the month, maybe. They may not be quite on the shelves yet. And then you can do your test at home to see whether or not you have COVID at that time. Now, a few caveats. One is the test is a little bit pricey. Depending on which one you get, it's somewhere between $30 and $40. So if you're going to test every day, that'll run up some money. But for certain situations, it could be helpful. So some caveats for the home testing. One is that it's not quite as sensitive as a PCR test done in an healthcare facility. So if you have symptoms of COVID, let's say you have a bit of a fever, cough, and you lost your sense of smell and taste, and you do your home COVID test and it's negative, you need to get a PCR test to back it up to make sure it's not a false negative. So that's something to keep in mind. The other thing is that when you get your test, you need to do what you're supposed to do based on the test result. So if you've been exposed to COVID, for instance, and you decide to home test and your test is positive, you need to quarantine. And you need to quarantine for at least 10 days, most likely 14. And you can tell you should call your provider, healthcare provider, and let them know, or call the health department and let them know. But you need to quarantine. You need to do what you're supposed to do, even though it's a home test. So if you're going to do a home test and it's positive and you don't bother quarantining, you go about life as you normally would, then the home test isn't doing anything for us, right? So it's just something to continue to think about with home testing. So where are some scenarios where home testing might be helpful? Let's say you are going to, say you've been vaccinated, but you're going to go see your elderly parents, they are a bit frail, maybe have some underlying health problems, and they've been vaccinated too. And you want to make a little bit extra assurance that you don't have COVID, get a home test and test before you go. And it increases the likelihood that it's a safe event for you to do it. Another possibility is if you've been exposed to somebody And then they call you up and say you have COVID. You can do home tests periodically, maybe 3 home tests over a period of a week. And if those are negative, it gives you some assurance and reassurance and the ability to plan for what you might want to do. You can home test after travel if you're concerned that you may have had a lot of exposures to other people out there during your travels, crowded airports, so on and so forth. So these are some scenarios for your home test. If you have symptoms in your home test, and your home test is positive, you can call your doctor and tell them, and then they can let you know whether you should be evaluated or not. And if it's negative and you have symptoms, then you probably need to go find somebody to do a PCR test on you, just to make sure that it's not a false negative if you have symptoms. So let's talk a little bit about vaccines. Here across the country, the number of vaccines being given every day is dropping from day to day. I think we hit a peak a little bit over 3 million, somewhere maybe 3.5 million a day. And now it's down to, I think, 2.1 million per day across the country. I mean, it's still a fair number, but it's going down. And that's true here in North Carolina. Some counties more than others. Our rural counties, it's falling off faster than it is in our urban areas. And so why is that? Well, a lot of it is the fact that the people who really wanted to get vaccinated have found a way to do it. There's a lot more vaccine out there, and we've had a lot more access to vaccine, so people are getting it. So here in Forsyth County, how many people have gotten it? Roughly about 45% of our county has been fully vaccinated of the people who are over the age of 18. 45%, that's not even half. Now if you go into the population that's over 65, it's just under 70%, so it's much better. But our younger ages, younger as in between the ages of 16 to 30, are not getting vaccinated nearly as much as the older people. Even though I'm really pleased with 45% fully vaccinated of our over 18 here, and by the way, it's not much different across the country. We still got a ways to go, what I'm afraid is that we're not going to get much above half for being fully vaccinated, maybe 60%, and that's just not enough for us from a community standpoint or a public health standpoint, we're just going to have to keep at it. There's a lot of reasons for people to not want to get vaccinated. One is true hesitancy. In other words, well, I'm worried. I'm worried that the shot's not been tested. I'm worried we haven't had enough time to see if there's really side effects. I'm worried that about the J&J shot with the blood clots. I understand concern, I'm not worried about these shots, think now that with the 125 million people in the United States who've gotten a COVID vaccine, that's pretty good. We are counting, we are registering everyone, and we know about all of the adverse events that people might have. Yeah, there's some expected reactions. You'll be a little sore. You might get a fever afterwards. A few people get some rashes that come and go pretty quick afterwards. A few people have had some allergic responses, a small number. Serious allergic responses has been less than 1 in a million. And then the J&J now, we've reached out and we found a small number of blood clots that may be associated with the vaccine, but the absolute risk For the population at large is one in a little less than one in a million. If you're a female between the ages of 18 and I think it's 45 or 50, 50 maybe, then the risk is about 7 per million. So 7 per million is a pretty low number. And so these vaccines are safe. So from the hesitancy standpoint, I think we have enough information now that if you've been waiting to see how well the vaccines are going to do in the long run, then now's your time to go. Efficacy, let me throw a number at you. Your chance of getting COVID, if you've been vaccinated, fully vaccinated, which means 2 weeks past your second shot, or first shot if you got J&J, that the chance of you getting hospitalized with COVID is 0.0008%. And your chance of dying is 0.00005%. How's that for reassurance about efficacy? It's pretty darn good. Our kids, the clinical trials for our kids are going well, actually. And Pfizer had submitted, I think I mentioned a couple, 3 weeks ago, that Pfizer had submitted their data for the 16 to 18 year old group, for the 12 to 16 year old group. So next Tuesday, the FDA is expected to announce an emergency use authorization extension for kids between the ages of 12 and 16. On Wednesday, the ACIP, the CDC committee, is going to release and talk and put out their recommendations on how it should be used in that group. And expect them to say that everyone between the ages of 12 and 16 should be vaccinated for COVID. So, that's pretty cool. The safety data is going to be no different in that group than it is in the adults. It's going to be safe, fine to do. So, what are the reasons to get vaccinated? Remember, I've always been talking about there are four reasons to get vaccinated. Now we have a fifth. So what are those reasons again? Just to review. One, to protect yourself. Be selfish. Protect yourself from COVID. Two, protect the loved ones around you from COVID. If you've been vaccinated, it's much less likely that you'll give it to one of your loved ones who've not been vaccinated. Three is a chance at a normal life, to start doing things because you've been vaccinated. And as the summer goes on, you're going to see more and more and more opportunities to do things that are normal. Go to movies, travel, so on and so forth. You want to go to Europe? Guess what? If you're vaccinated, you can go. And so that's the third reason. The fourth reason is to be a good citizen for your community, to get us up close to herd immunity so that this virus will fade into the background. But what's the fifth reason? The fifth reason is for kids. You get your kid vaccinated, then they don't get COVID, which is good. Who wants your child to be sick? Two is that you have a lot more reassurances that they can play together, socialize together, do things like go to the prom, so on and so forth. They can have more of a normal life. They can be a kid again. And then the even most important one for the parent is that they don't have to quarantine or get tested if they're exposed. So these like phone calls that the parents get, hey, you know, how are you doing today? I got some bad news. Your child Johnny was exposed, on the school bus coming home yesterday. And so you're all in quarantine. Congratulations. If you've been vaccinated and if the child's been vaccinated, they don't have to still quarantine, which means you get 2 weeks that you don't have to sit at home doing extended virtual learning, and the child can continue to go to school or have their camp or their normal experience. So all kids who are going to camp this summer really should be vaccinated. all kids who want a normal life should be vaccinated. So basically, all kids should be vaccinated. And starting by the end of next week, there will be clinics opening up for that. And there'll be, you can get it at the health department. Most of the healthcare systems will have appointments available for kids for 12 to 18. It'll be the Pfizer vaccine initially. Moderna's vaccine will be an EUA out maybe in a month or two. And then lastly, I think that the data will get submitted to the FDA in September. For our kids who are between the ages of 2 and 12. And then once that happens, it'll be probably November or so, and we can start vaccinating our elementary age kids. So that's really all cool. That's good news. Then we can start as an entire society to talk about doing things that are normal. One thing that was asked, I got a question about that I wanted to mention. Apparently there's been some information going out on, particularly in social media, about the vaccines affecting the menstrual cycles. And while there is a potential, because anytime anyone gets ill, sometimes you can miss a period or the period might be a little late. And so, you know, you get a little bit of inflammation with the vaccine, so sometimes that could happen. But I looked and spent some time. There's no data at all that there's any effects on the menstrual cycle above and beyond what would normally be occurring if you weren't vaccinated. Lastly, I wanted to talk a little bit about vaccine mandates and passports. So the universities, some of them have come out mandating vaccines for their students to come back for fall semester. Do I think this is a good idea? Simple answer, yes, it's a great idea. It's really the only way that a residential university, that means a resident that or a university that has the students on campus living their dorms, is going to have a normal experience, is to have everyone be vaccinated. And the only way you can make sure everyone's vaccinated is to mandate. So I agree with the mandate for universities. And I think it's okay to do it while it's an emergency use authorization. I think that both Pfizer's and Moderna's vaccines, and possibly even J&J's vaccine, will have a full FDA approval by the end of the summer. So that consideration will go away. I think down the road, with some more experience with the full FDA approval, I think that you'll see a lot of healthcare systems mandating their employees to get a vaccine. I mean, from a patient safety reason, it makes a huge amount of sense. I don't think it's in the near future, but I think people should start thinking about it for down the road. And then there's the whole consideration of vaccine passports. These are when you put your vaccine information, most people are talking about doing it on a smartphone, or you get a little QR code, and which gives your COVID vaccine and testing. And what will that be useful for is travel, particularly international travel. I think Europe's gonna require it to be in some sort of a validated code. They may also accept the CDC Yellow Book for international vaccines like yellow fever and such. You can get your COVID vaccine recorded in there. But Europe may not accept that card that you were given when you were vaccinated because they're too easily forged and bought. So if you're going to travel this summer, particularly internationally or to Hawaii or Alaska, you'll want to check on what they require as far as your vaccine status and how you'll have to show it. Airlines might actually start requiring it too. We'll have to see how that goes on. Lastly, I want to say that how are we going to get, what's the end of COVID going to look like? So there have been some a lot of stuff coming out about this lately. Some of the pundits saying, "Oh, well, we're not going to hit herd immunity. Woe is us. It'll never go away. We're never going to get herd immunity because not enough people are going to get vaccinated." And then there's the CDC report, which looks pretty rosy, particularly for the summertime. So what's the real answer? Well, it's a little bit of both. And I've been saying this all along. I think people have been oversimplifying what herd immunity is. What it is not is that you vaccinate. All of a sudden you hit a magic number and COVID just goes away. That's now how it happens. It's what's happening now. The more and more and more people get vaccinated, the more you push down the curves, the fewer the cases happen. On a micro level, if you have an exposure in a workplace and before vaccination, six people might have gotten it, now maybe one will get it. So we push down that transmission factor. And we'll continue to do that as time goes on, and as so one way or another, by the end of this, everyone is going to become immune to COVID. And you get to choose how. You either get vaccinated or you get it the hard way and you get sick with it. And when I say sooner or later at some point, I'm talking in the next 2 or 3 years. Because what's going to happen is COVID's going to fade into that background of other respiratory viruses that we have that circulate, which include influenza, RSV, adenovirus, paraflu, all those cold and flu viruses. It's going to become one of those. And what we're going to be doing is you get a fever and a cough, and then you either call, you go to your doctor, you get tested for flu, you get tested for COVID, you'll probably get tested for some of these other viruses. If it's the flu, you're going to get Tamiflu and told to stay home for 5 days. If it's COVID, you're going to get the COVID drug that'll be out in about a year, and you'll be told to stay home for 10 days. And if it's one of the other viruses, it'll depend what it is. So it's just going to fade into those normal things of wintertime cold and flu sicknesses that we have. That's my prediction of what's going to happen. So it's never going to go away entirely. So the pundits who say that we're never going to get real herd immunity, i.e. like measles, where you can eradicate the infection in a whole continent, they're probably right. But the other people who are saying that we're going to have normal lives again are also probably right. And you know what? Maybe during cold and flu season, when there's a lot of it circulating in the community, maybe we'll have people wearing some masks, and that's okay. And who wants to get sick? Who wants to give it to other people? You know, you got a few sniffles, and wear your mask. Be considerate for other people. So maybe it'll become a little bit a part of what we do. Won't be mean we'll be doing it all the time and everywhere and anywhere, but so that's what I think is going to be the end of this, and it's kind of fun to be able to talk about the end. And it means we've come a long ways and we're making good progress, and we are. So, a few other reminders. One, happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers who are watching. Two is opening weekend for the Dash this weekend. First 500 people get a Dr. Old bobblehead either on Saturday or Sunday for the game. Play some baseball, be a little bit normal, and we'll have some fun. Bring a sweater, though. I think it might be cool.